Vegan, excuse me, The Vegetarian Epicure, cookbooks about her new book, Vegan Vegetarian Omnivore. He also interviews Lynn Curry, Eastern Oregon resident and author of the book, Pure Beef. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support in our spring membership drive. You are key to keeping KBOO strong. That's it for the first segment of tonight's newscast. Stay tuned for news in depth, followed by Oregon primary election coverage.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
If you're following the election system closely, you may be asking yourself, is there a better way to do this? KBOO reporter Jamie Haddad spoke with Kristen Eberhard of the Sightline Institute about her ongoing series looking into alternative forms of election systems and how we can make our democracy a bit more democratic.
I'm speaking today with Kristen Eberhard of the Sightline Institute. She has published an ongoing series on how archaic voting systems cripple democracy. Thanks so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you for having me.
How would you define the term archaic voting system?
Voting systems that came about in the 18th century and don't actually work that well and haven't been updated since.
Why do you think it's so important to have a conversation about alternative forms of democracy?
I think everybody could probably agree that our democracy is not at its most shining moment right now. And that's a problem for people feeling confidence in their government, for people feeling like their government really is a democracy that represents them, and for feeling like they have a voice and some power that the things that they want can actually happen.
Why do you think we've become so resistant to change in our own democratic processes?
I mean, we do have a very stable democracy, right? I mean, it's been around for over two centuries. And so I think a lot of people look at that and say, well, that's success. Stability is success. Other countries aren't as stable. They have coups or turnovers.
There's been a lot of talk about this idea of a living constitution. Why has it been so difficult to have a living democracy? And what steps can we take to get there?
Yeah. So our constitution, it was meant to be a living constitution, but we're sort of, there's two things that make it hard. One is that it's very hard to change. And then the other is that, you know, some people in the judiciary don't really think of it as being something that should be interpreted in modern times. They think of it as like, we should do it like they did it when there were slaves in this country, and that's how we should interpret it. But the good news is that a lot of the voting systems is actually not written into the Constitution. I mean, certainly not at the local and state level. So there's lots of opportunity to change things first at the local level, then at the state level, and then eventually at the federal level.
What are some of the things that you talk about in the series that kind of put up these roadblocks to the way that we vote or the way that election processes take place?
Yeah, so the biggest sort of thing that's unique and in some ways problematic is we use single winner districts with winner take all voting. So that means, you know, we're all familiar with it because it's how you voted your whole life. You have one district, one representative, you get one vote, and the person with the most votes, not even necessarily a majority of votes, wins, which means for your district, that person represents maybe 51%, sometimes less than 51%, and the rest of the people get nothing. They get nobody. And it doesn't have to work that way. Other places, it doesn't work that way.
In one of your articles, you talk about how New Zealand actually managed to change its electoral system back in 1996. How exactly did they change it, and what can we learn from their transition?
So they had a national referendum. So they first had a committee so there was first unhappiness that there was this situation where there were two major parties that dominated the elections, even though there were other people in the country, people of color, people of, you know, different views that just weren't getting any voice. So first there was unhappiness, then there was a study that said, hey, you know, here's some other options. And then there was a national referendum that said, do you want to keep it the way we have it or do you want to change it? And then if you want to change it, do you want to change it in which of these ways? So they chose to change to something that's called multi-member proportional. So they keep some of the members of the legislature are elected the way that we elect ours. You have a district, you get one district representative, but then they top off the legislature with people from parties. So as a voter, you get two votes, one for your local representative and one for your favorite party that most closely aligns with your views. And so the legislature overall then looks more like what people think of. So they, for example, they have the indigenous people there, the Maori, prior to this change, couldn't get people into the legislature. Now they have a Maori party, and the Maori party gets votes, and so they get a vote in the legislature in proportion to how many people support them.
What other countries or models of democracy can we look at to gain a better idea of what's out there and what other possibilities can be installed in our own electoral system?
Yeah, so there's sort of two like really broad umbrellas of types of voting systems. So there's plurality majority systems, which is what we have, where the person with plurality or majority support wins. And then the other big umbrella is proportional representation systems, where any group of people can win legislators in proportion to their size. So within the proportional representation, there's various ways of doing it. So New Zealand is one way, the multi-member proportional. The other way that's that a lot of countries use is open list voting. So you have, you know, three legislators in a district that are going to get elected, and on your ballot, you have options listed by party. So you can pick your favorite person, but your vote counts both for that individual and for the party, so that you make sure that both you get your favorite guy, but also the party can get representation in proportion to its support.
And that allows for things like more parties to get involved, exactly. More candidates who have a wider, diverse range of interests, right, or stances.
And from a voter perspective, it's nice because, you know, if you support a third party right now in the United States, you're really just throwing your vote away. And that's just kind of a mathematical reality for most elections. So in these countries that do proportional representation, you can have a Libertarian Party, a Green Party, a Progressive Party. As long as people support it, you have it. And then from the legislator's perspective, it's also actually different because instead of having this partisan gridlock that we see, I mean, very much at the federal level, but even at the state level, we're seeing this partisan gridlock. When you have more parties, it makes that gridlock harder because there's just different voices, sort of different nuances getting discussed. And so the legislators, instead of just being like, no, I'm blue and you're red, so I don't like you, they're like, oh, well, let's go talk to the purple guys and the gold guys and the green guys. And so the evidence from the countries that do this is that they actually have a much steadier sort of long-term policies. And the result of that is they actually are able to manage their economies better. They have less crime because they're able to sort of work out these more nuanced discussions that aren't just like red team versus blue team.
What would installing some of those alternative forms of voting look like in Oregon and Washington?
So there's, you know, different ways to do this. So let's say, for example, that Oregon did mixed member proportional the way that New Zealand does it. So we could keep our 30 Senate districts and you could elect a senator just like you do now, but then you could also vote for your favorite party. And then you could top off the legislature with 30 party representatives. So say you still like your local Democrat or Republican, but you actually are kind of a Green Party type person. So you get to cast your vote for Green Party, and then if a bunch of other people do too, you get one Green Party or two Green Party people in there, or you get some Independent Party, or you get some Libertarian Party, and it just really would round out the legislature. So instead of having, you know, right now the Senate is 12 and 18, you might have like 11, you know, and a few of something else.
On a national level, how would this year's presidential election look like under a different voting system?
So many cities around the country elect their mayors with instant runoff voting, where you get a ranked choice ballot, and it basically acts like an instant runoff, that you pick your first person, but then if they don't make it, if they get eliminated, then you get a chance to vote in the runoff for your second favorite. So right now, if you had all of the presidential candidates running in one pool and people were able to rank their choices, so it wouldn't just be the plurality of people who like Trump, you would also see what, you know, the Kasich second choice voters are, what the Rubio second choice voters are once that person gets eliminated. So Trump, the polling right now suggests that he only has a plurality of support, but he has won the nomination because voters from those other candidates weren't able to participate once their person was eliminated. They were out. They had no more voice. And if they had a voice, if they had that ranked choice ballot, then you would see the candidate who would win would be the one who actually has a majority of the support from the people. And it would pull towards the middle. It also, an interesting thing when you have a ranked choice ballot like that, is you actually have less negative campaigns because nobody wants to diss another candidate when that those voters could be ranking you second. So you don't want to alienate them by calling people idiots. So we actually see that the campaigns are much more civil and much more sort of focused on ideas and policies instead of character assassinations, because there's no benefit to a character assassination when you're trying to get as much support as possible instead of just trying to kill off the other guy, which is what you do with winner-take-all voting.
Now, the demographics of the U.S. are changing. One, a lot of younger voters. It's a much more diverse voting pool. Do you imagine or forecast any changes in our electoral systems in the coming years?
I hope so, because right now, white men make up just over a third of the population, and they have more than two-thirds of the elected positions in our country. And that's crazy. And especially as our population becomes more and more diverse, if we have a voting system that continues to enable one small group to have all of the power over the other groups, it's not a recipe for success for democracy. It is a recipe for people being very unhappy that they do not see themselves and their views represented in their elected officials. So I think we're already seeing the already we have a problem, right, with white men being, you know, two or three times overrepresented amongst our elected officials and women of color being, you know, significantly underrepresented. And that's only going to get worse as our population becomes more diverse. So hopefully that will start to trigger some conversations about, like, hey, does it really have to be this way? Maybe we could do it a different way.
How would other voices be able to get involved in a new political system? Would they form new parties? Would they gain entrance into previously established ones? How would that work?
Yeah, I mean, if you were moving to proportional representation, probably what would happen is you would have new parties, or maybe some of the ones that already technically exist but really don't have a lot of power and money right now would gain, you know, with each election as they won one seat, two seats, they'd gain more power, they'd gain more membership, and they would start building up the capacity to help people run. So it's hard to run if you've never run and you don't, you know, have money in the campaign apparatus. It can be hard, and so that's where third parties can come in and really fostering new people coming into the system, helping train, mentor, give them the infrastructure to run a successful campaign. And then that success will beget success. You know, so if you have a party that is running younger people of color, women, and they're starting to gain seats, then those other people who start to see their faces represented will flock to that party, they'll gain more power, and continue to run more people.
Are there any new stories or new angles that are coming up in this series?
Yeah, so the next thing I'm going to start looking at is Portland. You know, so I've been looking sort of very broadly just at what does proportional representation do? How does it work? And everything I've found has been great news. It's like, oh, more women, more people of color, more civil campaigns, less money, you know, less corporate influence. Great. Next, I'm going to really bring it down to the city level here, where there is some discontent and discussion about how we elect our council members and how expensive those campaigns are and how, you know, unrepresentative they have been historically. So I'm going to be looking at, like, how could that look different? Like, what if we change the way that we elect those council members? And, you know, looking at the demographics of the city as it exists and as it's projected to be in the coming decades, what might our council look like if we changed things? For example, one way of changing things in Portland, you know, we have five city council members. You know, one of them is also the mayor. And right now, some of them are elected in off years and some in on years. So the relatively small change would be just elect them all in the presidential year so that they're all in a high turnout election when most people are turning out to vote. And you put them all in one pool and let voters rank them. And so that way, if you had a, you know, independent or a person of color who had 25% support in the community, so they could never reach that majority threshold to win a seat, but they could win a seat in a pool of five. So it's a, you know, just a slight change to the timing, putting them all in 1 year, and then a slight change to the ballot. Instead of you marking, you know, one in this race and one in this race, you just rank them all together. And then you have a five-person council that is just going to look a lot more like Portland.
Final closing remarks.
So we have this voting system that has just survived for two centuries, and it's, you know, it served us well. At the beginning, we were really on the cutting edge of democracy, but democracy has kind of passed us by, and I think it's really time for us to catch up, and that catch up could really start right here in Portland and then at the Oregon state level, and we could just show other states there's a better way of doing this that engages more people and makes our democracy more reflective.
I understand there's a county in Oregon that's already taking on this step to change their electoral voting?
Yeah, so
system.
Right now, Benton County, Oregon, is putting an initiative on the November ballot. So they're gathering signatures right now, and they have some great support from really respected leaders in the community. And the initiative would make it so that Benton County councilors would be elected by instant runoff voting, that one where you get to rank your choices so that if your first choice gets eliminated, your voice is still heard.
Do you know how that came about? Why they decided to get that on the ballot?
I don't know the full history, but I know that there is somebody there who has been in the state legislature who was frustrated with how things work and how elections worked, and so has been looking to make a change. And this was a moment in Benton County where they had an opportunity to do that on the ballot. So we hopefully it'll pass, and then at least, you know, Benton County voters will get a chance just to try that out and see, you know, how it feels to get to rank your candidates, and then how those elections feel in terms of if it follows the pattern we've seen, being less negative, more sort of thoughtful and productive, and then how that council ends up looking a little bit more moderate and with, you know, less extremist voices.
If people want to find out more about the series, Archaic Voting Systems, Crippled Democracy, where can they do that, Kristen?
Sightline.org.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Okay, thank you.
For KBOO News, I'm Jamie Haddad.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Pan-African Film Series. This month, May 18th at 6 p.m., will be A Message from Women.